Good morning. Welcome to Your Health. I'm Ann Goldin, and this week we're going to talk about access to healthcare, single payer healthcare options, and MedAsHell doctors. My guest is Dr. Paul Gorman. He is an MD who works at OHSU and Providence teaching facilities and in Portland area, and was in practice in Astoria with his wife in the 80s. And that's where I first met him. Good morning, Dr. Gorman.
Good morning.
I'm so glad you agreed to come back on the program.
It's my pleasure.
Tell me what it is that you do.
Well, in my professional life, I'm an associate professor at Oregon Health Science University. I teach in inpatient care, taking care of patients in the hospital at OHSU. And I also teach in outpatient care, taking care of patients in the clinic over at Providence Medical Center. So okay. Kind of get a mix of outpatients.
So you're teaching medical students?
Medical students and residents, yeah, both.
And internal medicine primarily?
Yeah, internal medicine, so basically anything involving adults that doesn't require surgery.
Okay.
That's what we do.
So it's like the whole panoply of everything.
It is, yeah.
Okay.
It is. I think in the particular settings that I work, we see a lot of people who are suffering from some of the problems with our health system. So I get a slightly skewed population in that way. We see a lot of people who have no insurance, who've lost their work and so forth. And so we see a slightly different population because of that.
Are they coming to your facilities because they can't be denied access? Is that why they're there?
Well, I think two ways. One is that, for example, hospitals like health systems like the Providence system have a charitable mission and make a point of providing some access to people who have limited means. The clinic, we see a lot of patients who maybe they lost their job and their insurance ran out, so they're looking for some place to get some care, and they end up there. Then the other way, of course, is that, yeah, folks that show up in the emergency department and are so sick that they have to be hospitalized end up in our hospitals.
Mm-hmm. And when people lose their insurance, then they usually wait until they're much sicker to seek any care at all.
Yeah, it's a pretty typical story, and I think any health professional who works in those kinds of settings, emergency departments, urgent care settings, and so forth, will tell you the same thing. A typical, you know, one or the other or both of a couple, say, will lose their job, and a few months later they'll lose their insurance. They have the opportunity to buy insurance under COBRA, but of course with no job they can't afford it. And so eventually they'll run out of insurance, they'll run out of medications, and then they'll come to one of these clinics. I just saw a guy recently in his 50s who has always been self-insured, but the cost of self-insurance is just, you know, I think Regence has raised its rates 5 times in the last couple of years, so it was just beyond his means. And he was a really interesting guy because he was so engaged in his care. He knew all his meds. He knew everything that he needed to do, but of course he couldn't do it because he couldn't afford these things. So we were working out a plan. What meds could he get by with? What could we do differently? A real typical story, though, where high blood pressure, diabetes, all kinds of things we know how to treat go untreated because people lose their access.
Right, right. Okay, so what's happening with single payer in Oregon? You know, this is an idea that in the countries around the world that have a single payer, they have no cost for administration. So all the people in every little doctor's office like mine, every clinic, every hospital, every multidisciplinary office has a whole billing department of people who spend their entire life fighting with insurance companies, trying to get reimbursement, figure out referrals needed or whatever. And that could all go away, and those people could do something creative.
It's pretty impressive. The health systems, there's been a lot of data coming out, especially in the last year. We just had a paper came out that compared the costs for doing all those things in a physician's office or a doctor's office in the U.S. compared to Canada. And what they did is they counted the amount of time the doctor spends dealing with paperwork and the amount of time the nurse spends dealing with paper and the amount of time the billing clerk and so forth down the line. In the average doctor's office, which saves $70,000 a year, that's a lot of money, $70,000 a year that they wouldn't have to, you know, charge their patients.
Right.
And so that's an example of the way it's done on a national scale. When you look at all the ways that these administrative costs raise rates, it's about $350 billion.
That's with a B.
And that's enough. $350 billion is actually enough to cover all the 50 million people who don't have insurance right now.
Well, you know, that's about the number that everybody's been bandying around about how much we need to save in the budget.
Yeah.
Hello?
Well, and that's a very good point. I think when you look at the impact that are really astronomical, we're paying, I think the figure now is in the neighborhood of $7,500 or $8,000 per person in the U.S., more than double what most modern democracies are spending on health care. We're getting worse outcomes than they are, but we're spending twice as much. And if you think, you know, what would happen to state budgets, or, you know, how many more teachers could be hired? How many more firemen? How many more police? How much better could our small businesses do if they didn't have to worry about the cost of health care, which is so astronomical?
So, okay, in my fantasy, it goes like this. Everybody tomorrow in America, no matter what their age, no matter what their anything, they get an equivalent of a Medicare card, access to whatever they need. And then everyone knows exactly what the deal is. The payment is whatever it is. You know, you bill whatever you bill. You do it electronically. You get paid within 2 weeks. And all the billing departments disappear. And all that, you know, all that uncertainty and whatever disappears. And everybody knows when I need to go to the doctor, I can go to the doctor of my choice and have whatever the care is that I need. And that gets me into the pharmacy. It gets me to whatever it is I need.
Yeah, great vision. You know, it's interesting. Here in Oregon, actually, we did a natural experiment just recently. It's a nationally sort of famous study now, but our Medicaid in Oregon didn't have enough money to cover everyone.
Right.
So they decided they were just going to have a lottery and decide at random who would get covered and who wouldn't. Sort of the way we do medical trials to see what works. And so we ended up having a randomized trial of giving people access to care, and the results are striking. When people get access to care and don't have to worry about copays and all the rest of that stuff, lots of good things happen. They're way more likely to have a regular place that they go to get care. They're way more likely to get mammograms and cholesterol checks. They're more likely to go to the hospital when they need it. Interestingly, they did not see an increase in emergency department use. Instead, you know, they saw that people were getting the care they needed, and people felt better. They were more likely to say they were in good health. So that vision you're talking about, which is let people be able to get the care that they need, really has an impact on their health and their well-being.
Did this study look at the expense? Oh, is that what you're going to get to?
Well, this is under Medicaid, so they weren't able to look at costs, but their next phase of the study will actually look at outcomes. They'll look at how well their blood pressure and diabetes are controlled and those things. And, of course, that won't be a big surprise if you have health care.
Right, when people have access. Although
conditions would be better treated.
The other thing is, you know, are people, when they have access and they don't have to worry about the cost of it, are they also making better choices, you know, on food choices, exercise choices, you know, relationships? Are they taking better care of their whole life?
And we don't know the answer to that. I think we do know that we're really forcing people with chronic disease to swim upstream when we make it impossible for them to get the care they need. They can't afford strips to check their blood sugar. They can't afford medication to control their cholesterol and their and so forth. And furthermore, because they're so impoverished, of course, it's actually less expensive to eat things that are bad for you in our country, oddly enough. So if they're trying to make good food choices, the fact that they're impoverished makes that worse. Just today we have it out that the U.S. poverty rate is now 1 in 6, the highest level in decades, I think, since they've been measuring it.
Yes.
So this is a serious problem, and the health insurance industry is essentially crippling our economy. Because of our health system, our health insurance system, we're spending twice as much as we need to for health care, and that's bankrupting people. I think the figure is 150 Oregonians facing bankruptcy every week, triggered by health care costs. And the recent legislation at the national level did some good things, but it does nothing about the bankruptcy problem. So not only are people impoverished, but more people are going into bankruptcy, because if you get sick, it can bankrupt you.
Right.
It's
right.
the most important cause, most frequent cause of bankruptcy in the U.S.
So what do you think could be done to fix that? How would we address that? Would it be a law?
It's surprising how simple it is.
Oh, good. Tell us.
We cover their health care costs. If you look at poverty rates this is sort of interesting. Medicare, for all the talk about how expensive it is and so forth, the truth is it's a very, very successful program. And one of the results of Medicare has been that there's less poverty among seniors.
Absolutely.
Of course, Social Security does that. But if you look at poverty among the general population, it's about 15%. But among seniors, it's much lower. And among seniors, there's access to health care. And so the one population in our country that gets health care and is not impoverished or at risk of bankruptcy because of health care costs is seniors. If we covered everyone, then
That's why I use Medicare as the model. I see Medicare as an amazingly effective program. And I'm a provider who bills Medicare and gets paid by Medicare. So I see how it works both from the patient point of view and from the doctor point of view. And from the patient point of view, they know that they can get what they need. If they have a serious problem, if they have a heart attack, if they need diabetes care, if they need their back work on, whatever it is that they need, they can get it. And there's this sense of relaxation or well-being or something that comes with knowing that they're not going to lose their house because they get sick.
Exactly. In fact, that's exactly what a patient said to me once. She was in the clinic. She was having chest pain. She'd had previous heart attacks, and she needed to be hospitalized, and she refused to go in the hospital. And when I went in with the resident to talk to her, she started to cry and said the last time she got sick, she almost lost her marriage and her house.
Oh, man.
And she just wouldn't, you know, she couldn't risk that again. And I think what you've just said is really true. I think under a Medicare-like system, what we call expanded and improved Medicare for everyone, you don't have to worry whether you're covered. Of course you're covered. Doctors don't have to worry. The moment you walk in the office, is this person covered? What's the copay? What's the deductible? And waste all that effort figuring that out. You're covered.
Right.
I think for providers, for clinicians, we're very much faced with some of the bureaucratic red tape and so forth that Medicare provides, and we're worried about reimbursement. But if you tell clinicians, we're going to save you $70,000 a year on billing.
I'm signed up. I'm there today. Right.
Exactly. And you won't have to waste as much of your time, because family doctors, for example, spend most of their time not with patients, or close to 50% of their time is on other stuff. And a lot of that stuff is this paperwork. They'd much rather be with their patients instead of be figuring out the billing.
Oh, that's absolutely true. It seems like one of the things is like, okay, what would all the billing people do? Right?
Yeah, that's a good question.
There's a lot of people that would lose their job that they're currently doing as a billing person.
It's millions of people. And so most of the bills that have been introduced in the Congress and in states, and by the way, we hear about the states that are, I think some 20 states have, you know, had challenged the health reform bill. But what we're not hearing about is that more than 20 states, I think it's 25, have single-payer bills in process.
Ooh.
Either passed. For example, Hawaii has passed a single-payer bill. California passed a single-payer bill twice, but Governor Schwarzenegger vetoed it. Vermont just passed a single. So there's lots of single-payer activity going on around the country.
Has any state implemented it yet?
Well, Vermont is in the process of implementing a single-payer.
So we need to see how that works, because that is really, I mean, if the state can do it, I mean, of course, that means that Blue Cross, ODS, you know, right, all the big players are going to come in with a ton of bricks and millions of dollars to defeat it, because they are going to lose that market.
Well, they did last time, and I'm sure we can count on them to do that again.
Mm-hmm.
They're one of the most profitable industries in the country, raising rates and, you know, raising their own, at least at the high-level, salaries. Mm-hmm. But we know that many economic analyses have been done, both at the national level and at multiple states. I think the figure is around 20. And all of the economic analyses show that the state does better in terms of jobs, in terms of its economy, by going with a single-payer system. The most recent study was done by William Zhao of Harvard for the state of Vermont, and they looked at multiple options, and the best option for the state from an economic point of view, from jobs and economy point of view, was a single-payer plan. Because if you think about what that does, say for someone who wants to go into small business, so many people are tethered to a job and can't start that business they'd like to start because they can't go without health insurance. Or once they start it, their ability to hire employees is limited because every employee means they're going to have to do something about health insurance. But when everybody's covered, people are much more free to go into those small businesses, to hire other people, so forth.
Or to quit that job they hate.
Exactly.
Yeah. You are listening to Your Health. I'm Ann Goldin, and I'm with Dr. Paul Gorman. He is a medical doctor and internist at OHS, professor at OHSU and Providence Medical Centers in Portland. And we're talking about healthcare access, health insurance, health payers. So when we stopped, we were talking about the single payer and what that does for a state, the economy of the state, the employment.
Right.
Okay, let's continue with that.
Well, I think the other thing is, what happens to all those people that are working in the insurance industry or in this, let's call it the billing and paperwork industry now?
Yes.
and my way of thinking about it, most of the bills have a plan that in place for figuring out how are we going to retrain or move those folks into other jobs that are productive. I think, to me, I just think, because we have a workforce shortage in healthcare. We need more people helping us with the primary care.
So imagine
all those people becoming health coaches and therapists and all the good that they could do that would actually be delivering health care and making people feel better.
That sounds great. Yeah, let's let them start doing patient care.
Yeah.
I love it. That sounds great. Yeah, we could, instead of an army of insurance billing, an army of let's go over to the exercise room. We're all going to work out.
Exactly.
Yeah, that sounds great. Life coaches.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or maybe there could even be a national retraining program for all those people in whatever field they want to go into.
And I think that's one of the things that any sensible legislation will have to provide for is a transition period, so that folks, and a retraining opportunity, so that folks who are working in that industry can move into other areas, and hopefully. Mm-hmm. If they want to go into healthcare, we certainly need them. But what we really need them for is to help us take care of patients.
Right. Not doing whatever. Yeah.
Not sending the forms back to me to fill out a second time.
Oh, God. Or the third time.
Correct or way. Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So where is this single payer initiative in Oregon right now?
So Oregon's, there's a lot of exciting things happening in Oregon, actually. We had a single payer conference in January. Over 600 people attended, packed the church to the rafters here at the Unitarian Church in Portland.
Wow.
There was a single-payer campaign strategy meeting in June, and there's a new thing called the Oregon Single-Payer Campaign. They've got a website and a Facebook page and so forth that's organizing across groups. You know, you've got the Physicians for National Health Program, you've got the Oregon Nurses Association, you've got lots of groups, labor, Jobs with Justice, a whole lot of groups who are all in support of this. And they're sort of coalesced under this one Oregon single-payer campaign, which is starting to do a lot of things. One of the things that they've been doing is reaching out to communities. Our Mattis Health Doctors Group went around and I think visited 20 or 21 Oregon communities to hold town halls. And now we're starting a radio campaign to get the word out, both at a local and national level, because frankly, as the healthcare reform legislation moves through and we start to see what the consequences of that are going to be, there's some good, but for the most part, it's not solving the problems we need it to have solved. I think there's actually more interest at the state level, and there's a lot of activity, I would say, going on behind the scenes.
Cool. So if people want to get involved with that, how can they do it?
Well, I think the easiest thing to do would be to go to the Oregon Single Payer Campaign webpage. Or, if you prefer, Jobs with Justice, Physicians for National Health Program, and Healthcare for All Oregon. Those are all organizations that are actively involved. The simplest way would be, let's just say, to go to the Oregon Single Payer Campaign, and because they'll have links to the others.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, in terms of what to do, I think the most important thing to do is just to have the conversation with your neighbor, with your coworkers. What's the current healthcare system doing for you, and what would a different healthcare system look like? What would we like to see, and how can we best get what we're looking for in a healthcare system? We talk about, for example, when the insurance companies do try to bury us in advertising, they'll talk a lot about choice. The fact is, under our current system, they're the ones with the choice.
Mm-hmm.
When I see a patient who's had to switch physicians, it's never because the patient wanted to switch physicians. It's because their insurance, in fact, I just saw a guy, his employer changed insurance companies, and so he had to, and his insurance company had a different doctor he had to see. So he had to switch doctors, get all of his medications switched. This took, you know, visits and months and so forth, and his diseases got out of control. But he didn't have a choice about who he got to see. His insurance company made the choices. And what we're looking for is for patients and their doctors and their health providers to have the choices. So I think what people can do is go to the Oregon Single Payer Campaign website and get involved, and mainly just have that conversation with their neighbors. I think it's what's not appreciated, it's very much unappreciated, how many people are in support of single payer.
Well, anyone that has lost their insurance and is scrambling to buy their own insurance will be in support of this. In Astoria, we have a lot of people who have moved here over the last 15 years, retired, moved here, and a lot of them are not 65. They are in the, 50 to 65,
yeah.
And they are in that hole where they have to pick up their own insurance now. They've retired, and they are paying exorbitant rates, and they feel basically captive of whatever insurance company that they feel lucky enough to accept them and pay maybe a significant part of their monthly income because they might have a healthcare need.
Yeah, as if the insurance company was doing them a favor.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, so I think that part of the challenge now is that the insurance companies are still pretty much in control of the healthcare.
Totally
system.
In control. And if we just, there was a 2-week period during the healthcare debate when if you were 55 and over, you could be on Medicare. And I was jumping up and down for joy because I'm in that category. And I thought all the people I know, all the people I see who have been rejected by Blue Cross because they ever went to a doctor about anything, who can't get insurance.
Right.
They can maybe go to the state pool and buy that, $1,000 a month policy or whatever it is that they can get. But I think
the other thing that is not appreciated is that control that the insurance industry has over healthcare goes well beyond that. Once you do get access to health professionals, then what actually can be done for you is driven by the insurance companies. What's the copay? What's covered? What's not covered? And so as much as your clinician might like to just sort of figure out what's best, what they have to do is go with what's possible, what can be done given the constraints provided by the insurance
and what's crazy is treating choices, what you can have as a patient, are driven totally by your insurance company, what they're going to pay for. No,
right.
You can't have that MRI. You can't have that drug that I want you to have because insurance won't pay for it. That's crazy.
And so we're always having this conversation when we're talking about what to do for the patient. We're always asking, well, what does their insurance cover? We should never be asking that question. Of course, some things are going to be covered and some things aren't going to be covered because we can't, no healthcare system can afford all possible care. But under the Medicare for All kind of system we're talking about, those decisions move out of the back room and out of the boardroom and into a transparent public process. And that, for example, the Oregon bill, 3510, put together a board that's composed of health professionals, it's composed of citizens, consumers, and so forth, and somebody has to make decisions about what's going to be covered. But for those decisions to be made out in the open, in public, with public and community input, I think it's a much more democratic process. And when you look at other countries, here's the irony. Although we're spending more, when you compare us to other countries, we actually provide less. Fewer doctor's office visits, fewer hospitalizations, shorter stays in the hospital. Down the line, we get less of the kinds of care we need, less preventive care, even though we spend twice as much. So I think systems that do this, countries that do this, have figured out how to do it affordably and still deliver more care. And if we move things out of the back room and the boardroom of the large insurance companies where they're trying to figure out what's going to make us a profit, instead figure out how can we make people the most healthy, it, gets better for everybody.
Absolutely. Well, what do you think about Governor Kitzhaber's prioritized list for Medicaid that's been in place and, you know, basically in place since 1990?
Right. The Oregon Health Plan.
It's one way to figure out what's going to be paid for and what's not going to be paid for.
Yes, and I think what it may not be well understood. It's frustrating if what you're looking or need thinking you need to have covered isn't covered. But mm-hmm. when you look at the plan, it was actually developed with a very, very public process. They asked Oregonians what they cared about,
mm-hmm.
What conditions, and then they asked Oregon physicians and clinicians, what can you treat and how effective is the treatment? And the list is driven by as evidence-based an approach as they could when they developed it. Nowadays, we even have better evidence. Oregon is a center for evidence-based practice, and we have, for example, a drug program here in Oregon that looks hard at the scientific evidence about which drugs work,
mm-hmm.
and then makes decisions about what to cover based on what works, using the best scientific evidence available. That's the kind of process that I think Governor Kitzhaber and others kick-started back then,
mm-hmm.
and has really built a strong foundation in Oregon, and that's the sort of evidence we want to be using when we're making those decisions under a single payer plan.
You know, and if people want to look at that list, it's available at the Oregon Department of Health mm-hmm. website, and you can look it up and you can read through the list, and you can see that the top of the list are the most serious life-threatening neonatal infections. They're the most serious problems, and it makes sense. The list looks like a list that makes sense.
And treatable.
Uh-huh, yeah.
There are certain things that, for example, if I have a cold, frankly, there's not much you can do for me.
Right. Why? Don't waste money on that.
And so why should society spend money trying to make me better when I'm going to get better anyway?
Right.
Let's use that money where we can use it most. There are certain things that are so cost-effective. Vaccinating children, so cost-effective. It's a no-brainer. Helping people stop smoking is one of the most cost-effective things we can do. And there are things that, although they cost more, they have a huge impact. Like you were saying, neonatal care, intensive care. Those things, although they're expensive, they produce a lot of good.
Mm-hmm.
And in any case, we can get to a rational, evidence-based decision process that has public input and accountability instead of a profit-driven decision process that has no public accountability at all.
And as evidence changes, we can tweak it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, well, this is really exciting. I think it's going to be really fun to watch this going forward and seeing, you know, where we get with it in the next legislative session. Maybe. Do you think it'll be through this bill, if it becomes law and the governor signs it, then we could actually change the whole structure of healthcare delivery in Oregon?
I think we can do it in Oregon, in Canada, it happened province by province. It started with one province and spread from there. And I think Oregon has a tradition of kind of leading the nation on certain things and doing things in smarter ways. I think it's not going to be, I think, the present legislative session. But what we're working on now is a broad momentum building movement, starting from the ground up, so that our leadership can't help but move in the right direction because their constituents know better.
Uh-huh, yes. So, you've been listening to Your Health. I'm Ann Goldin. I'm with Dr. Paul Gorman, and we're talking about healthcare reform, healthcare access. Thank you very much, Paul, for joining me.
Nice talking to you again, Ann.
Yes, it's been great. Get involved with this movement of single payer so that we can all have access to the healthcare that we need. Again, thanks, Paul, for being here.
My pleasure.